It's now time for On the Line with Cheryl Wilkerson. The conversation will range from local dialogue to international. This show is meant to enlighten, inform, and to inspire. On the Line with Cheryl Wilkerson begins now.
Hello and welcome to On the Line. I'm your host, Cheryl Wilkerson. Thanks for joining me on this Sunday. Exciting guest to talk to today. I'm excited to talk to him, and he's going to drop some nuggets, and I'm sure you will enjoy him as well. So he's a young man born and bred right here in the Hampton Roads area. Many of you will know the name when I say Eli Harrell. That's because many of you all know him from the Virginia Beach area. Some of you know him from Ocean Lakes High School. Some of you know him from University of Virginia. Some of you may even know him from the NFL. Some of you may know him from his activism. And some of you may know him from his giving back to the community, especially recently, a very special project that he and others put on. So we'll talk about all of that. But first, we have to say good morning and welcome to On the Line.
How you doing, Ms. Cheryl? Thank you so much for having me.
I am doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well as well. I cannot complain.
So first, I want to start off with the fact that I met you a couple of weeks ago because you were putting on various special and important event in the area. You want to run that down for everyone?
Yes, ma'am. So Senator Rouse had contacted me a few months ago, letting me know his vision and letting me know that he wanted to have a mental health and wellness symposium. And it was right up my alley. You know, I am a person who has dealt with struggling with mental health in the past, you know, in my playing days and even after I was done playing. So I felt it was a great opportunity to partner with him and get my message out there to not only adults, but most importantly, the youth, and to let them know that, you know, the things that you may be going through is just a moment in time, you know. So I felt it was a great opportunity for me to partner with him in that.
And what was the outcome? What was the feedback?
Oh, my goodness. It was amazing. We had some incredible vendors. I got to connect with some old coaches that I didn't even know they were coming. They were there, and some family friends that I didn't know were coming were there. A couple of the kids that I trained were there and their families. And then my nieces came along with my sisters. So the feedback was amazing. Everybody appreciated the authenticity of Aaron, myself, and Eugene, the anchor of 13 News Now in the morning.
Eugene Daniels.
And also it was a doctor. It was a psychology doctor from THKD was there as well. So the feedback was amazing. You know, people, adults and children, asking great questions, and people even hitting me up after the event to pick my brain about other things. So our mission definitely was accomplished.
Wonderful. Do you see more events like that in the future, perhaps you might be part of?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm working with a few family members and close friends right now. We're trying to come together and do something special, hopefully this summer, maybe. And then if not, then we'll try to do it in the fall. But it'll be right along those same lines, you know, in a mentorship. Just allowing kids to be vulnerable and, you know, to let them know, like I said earlier, to, you know, the things that you're going through. It's just a moment in time. You just can't. The thoughts that are going through your mind and the things that you probably are seeing and going through right now, you just got to know that it's a light at the end of the tunnel, you know.
Are those things different for an athlete?
So they're for everyone. You know, and a lot of people don't, and that's why I was so happy when I looked in the crowd and I seen a lot of adults, you know, seen a lot of kids that weren't athletes. It goes for everybody, you know. Life is challenging, you know, and every day we can be presented with a new challenge. And, you know, sometimes we can get overwhelmed. And I just want to let people know that that is normal. Like, some people think that being overwhelmed or having your circuit overloaded is not normal. That's normal. It's just that how people deal with it is the is the issue and the things that really need to be addressed, right? Because it's okay to feel bad. It's okay to feel sad. But it's not okay to live in that forever, you know?
Go ahead and finish.
And that's my biggest thing, to let the people know, you know, whether you're a kid or an adult. The things that you might be going through, just know that you just got to push through that. And if you do believe in a higher power, you got to pray, you know, or do all the things that can put you into a mind state that lets you know, okay, I'm a human, right? We all go through things that are challenging, but I just got to keep pressing on and moving forward.
But I think that's the thing. I think people look, and they might even look at Eli Harrell and say, oh, he doesn't have any problems in his life. Why do I have problems? And, I don't know how to handle them because, okay, he says everybody has problems, but it doesn't look that way. It doesn't appear that way. It looks like, to me, it looks like, you know, this whole big mountain I don't know how to go over, but other people have their challenges, and they make it seem so easy. So what's wrong with me?
And you want to know what's sad too, Ms. Cheryl?
What's that?
A lot of these children and adults, unfortunately, will look at social media, and let's say, for instance, they follow Beyonce, or they follow Rihanna, or they follow LeBron James, or these superstars. Everything on social media is positive. No one really sheds light on the issues or challenges or traumas that they go through. So people will look at that like, well, these folks aren't going through anything. So when I'm presented something or when a challenge comes to me, I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm the only one that's going through something. So what I would say is we got to stop worshiping social media, you know, because it puts you in a place of non-realization. Like it's not you don't realize that you become so accustomed to looking at these people and you're trying to apply that to your life when in actuality, that's not your reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that's not your life. It's not real. It's social media. Everybody puts out the positive things and they rarely shed light on the things that they go through, you know, and it's some people that talk about the issues and traumas that they're dealing with on social media, but the masses, you don't really get that, Michelle.
You're exactly right. You are exactly right. So you grew up in Virginia Beach, and you went to Ocean Lakes High School. How did you decide to go to the University of Virginia? What was that recruiting like?
So I had scholarship offers from almost every school on the East Coast and some in the Midwest as well. And my dream school was Florida, University of Florida, because growing up, you know, I was a big Percy Harvin fan. He was on teammates with my cousin. He was teammates with my cousin, Terry Mitchell Jr., my first cousin. And I told my mom, like, Mom, I want to go to Florida. I want to go to Florida. And I'll never forget my junior season. They were recruiting my cousin, LaFonte Thurgood, who ended up going to Vanderbilt playing quarterback. And they came and offered me a scholarship. And I went home, I'm like, Mom, I got the offer. And in the midst of all that, my mom was battling pancreatic cancer. So when she passed, I came to a realization that I can't go that far away from my family, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm such a family-oriented guy, and that's the way I grew up. And I never had my dad, so I felt that I would have been stranded.
Right,
If I would have went all the way out there.
Mm-hmm.
So University of Virginia was recruiting me hard. Penn State was also recruiting me hard, Virginia Tech. So when I sat down and had my meeting with Mike London, it was a no-brainer. He was a black guy.
Yes.
You know, from the area.
Good coach.
Well-known. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a strong man, and I felt like that's what I needed at this point in my life. And a lot of people will say, well, you were way better than going to Virginia. Like, I hear people saying it to me every day in the gym.
What?
Like, why did you go to UVA? Why did you go to UVA? Because they say, because UVAs of recent aren't really known for football.
Yes.
And people are like, man, you could have played in the SEC. I'm like, bro, like, it's way bigger than that. Like, you wouldn't understand. And I try to explain to them that, you know, the death of my mom and not having her and not wanting to be away from my family is which made me ultimately choose UVA, and I don't regret it at all. You know, the relationships I built, my experience there wasn't the best, mm-hmm. Because it was such a culture shock. But when I look back on it, the guys that were introduced to me, the relationships I built, the camaraderie I built with my teammates and the coaches, I still talk to all those guys today. Like, I don't regret it at all.
Wonderful. What was it like when people were blowing your head up saying, you're going to get drafted, you're going to get drafted, you're going to get drafted. What you going to do? What you going to do? What was that like?
So it was a whirlwind because I didn't stay for my senior season. So after my junior year, I had left and entered the NFL draft. You know, I felt that it was time. I felt like I was struggling a lot in the classroom. It was hard for me to focus. Mm-hmm. I tried to talk to a mental health therapist, but that really didn't work because the guy didn't look like me. So I kind of shied away from it. Mm-hmm. And I just felt it was time, Ms. Cheryl. I was presented with an opportunity that at 20 years old, like I was 20 years old, like growing up in poverty. And then, like I say, the death of my mom is really what took everything to the next level for me, you know. So
who did you talk that over with? When you were thinking about going to the NFL, who was there for you to bounce that off?
My older brother, he was a father figure to me when my mom passed away. Mm-hmm. I moved with him, and then he had kids of his own who we called each other brothers because my older brother is old enough to be my father.
Okay.
And a couple of his kids were older than me, so I had nephews older than, mm-hmm. than I was. And we all grew up together, like, very close-knit.
That's family right there.
Oh, yeah, big time. So one of his sons, who I call my brother, he went to James Madison, and then I went to UVA. So we was right, we were right there with each other the whole way. So, yes, I talked to him about it, and I let him know. I'm like, yo, I checked out my name, and I seen a few mock drafts with me in there, so I think I'm ready to make this step. And like I say, my nephew, who I call my brother, he was finishing up his senior year, so we ended the draft together. So it just made it that much sweeter.
Right, right, right. What's the NFL like? I had a nephew. He made it to the NFL. I talked to him about it every blue moon. He went to Virginia Tech. Christopher Allison, y'all call him Chris. I call him Christopher because that's what his mother named him. But, you know, I talked to him about it, and we talk about it now. You know, some of the things, he lost his mother when he was drafted by Buffalo. So what was it like to go from UVA to go to the NFL? What was that? Was that culture shock as well?
I wouldn't say a culture shock. It was more so of a, oh my goodness. It was unlike anything you can imagine. So imagine being 21 years old, and them giving you so much money that you're so overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. It's unimaginable. It's unimaginable because, like I said, growing up in poverty, being so young, like being 21 years old, being drafted at 21 is very unheard of. It's guys that leave college when they're 24 years old. Mm-hmm. So I felt so overwhelmed because I was around grown men that I looked up to, watching on TV every week. Like, I'm in arm's reach of these guys, like in meetings with them, talking to them, being able to pick their brain about any and everything. So at first I was very overwhelmed, mm-hmm. But as I got used to it, I fit right in. You know, the guys treated me with respect. I never felt belittled. But it was a great experience. You know, a little overrated in the sense of the politics.
Yes,
the politics were very, you know, broad, and you know, just like anything, the politics will kind of ruin your experience, mm-hmm. A little bit. But like I said, I enjoyed myself. I met a lot of good guys. I built a lot of great relationships. And then one of the most important things that happened to me in my life. I was a part of the protest against police brutality. So I don't regret any of it. I'm very thankful. I get thanks for having the opportunity to make it and play and be fully vested and get my pension when I'm at a specific age. So I loved every bit of it. It was a little overwhelming at times, and you know, just like with anything, you have its ups and downs. But ultimately, I can't complain about it. I loved it.
How many teams did you play for?
Four. San Francisco, Detroit, Buffalo, and Philadelphia.
When you decided to protest, you made that decision based on what?
I made that decision based on how I was raised. My mom named me Medgar after Medgar Evers. He was the secretary of the NAACP. And being young, growing up, I literally knew everything about him. I remember doing a book report about him in elementary school. I know the guy named who murdered him. His name was Byron D. LeBeckwith.
Yes.
He was a Klan member.
Yes.
In Mississippi.
Didn't get brought up till many late years later. Yeah. You got it. You got it.
Absolutely. And I was just always in a, thank you, baby. I was always in a mind frame of right, being on the side of right and being against the wrong, you know? So I'll never forget when Colin came into the meeting and raised his hand. It was a players only meeting. He was like, guys, by the show of hands, I would want to see who would support me in my protest. And we're talking about a room of about 120 guys, right?
Okay.
Because at this time, we were still in training camp, so the roster has not been cut down to 53.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it's over 100 guys, Ms. Cheryl. About 15 hands went up, and none of them was of white guys.
And what did that say to you right then? What did you think?
I was so shocked, and it just brought me back to a place of realizing this country hasn't really progressed from all the work of Brother Malcolm, Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, the Black Panthers. I mean, so many guys who fought for the freedom of Black and brown people and the down-pression of Black and brown people. It just showed me that we really haven't made much progress. So right there, I felt the need, and my hand did go up, but right then I felt the need to really stand on something or fall for anything, right? So the protest began with me. I was raising my fist up during the anthem. And I'll never forget after that game where I first protested, it was against the Los Angeles Rams. At that time, I believe they still were the St. Louis Rams. After that game, I had like 15 cameras in my face when I had a towel on. So
were you prepared for that?
Know, but say it again.
Were you prepared for that?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
So it was such a whirlwind because I'll never forget our media guy came up to me as I'm walking out of the shower. He's like, hey, don't be shocked, but you're getting interviewed after you get dressed. So I had like 15 cameras and like 30 people in front of my locker talking to me about the protest. And of course, they asked me what was my stance, what was the protest all about, and I told them, hey, I'm not for police brutality. I'm not for Black and brown people being harassed and murdered in front of their families, in front of their children, being beat for no reason, police covering up their cameras. So at this point, it was if I'm not mistaken, Alton Sterling, Philando Castile, Mike Brown, this was at the height of all that,
yeah.
Right? And I can't tell you how many times on record, Colin, myself, and Eric Reed said that it was not about the American flag. Like, we was taking a knee,
right,
showing respect, because a Green Beret actually told Colin that taking a knee would be the most respectful way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we did, right? And everybody wanted to make it about the flag because, right, negativity sells. It doesn't matter what you say out of your mouth. What the media does is they paint a picture and they try to force a narrative on everybody else so they can run with it, so they can get your attention off the task at hand.
Correct.
I mean, it's been this way since, I don't want to get too deep, but it's been like this since before you was even born, Ms. Cheryl,
mm-hmm.
as you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they've done. So during that interview, I said that, and then another person took my words and flipped it in front of my face and talked about disrespecting the national anthem. And that was it for me. Like, I went full-blown activism after that, because it showed me, like I said earlier, how far we think we've gotten in this country, but how little we've actually accomplished, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, with all the efforts of the NAACP, with all the efforts of even Marcus Garvey and mm-hmm. the things that he tried to get done. It's sad because a negative person, an evil person, will take all of that good that you tried to do and you tried to push out into the masses of the people, and they will flip it and turn it into what they want it to be.
And how much longer did you stay in the NFL after you started protesting?
3 years.
And what were those 3 years like?
And it was never the same. It was never the same, Michelle. Mm-hmm. I got hate mail.
Mm-hmm.
In my locker, I had over 100 letters in my locker, scribble scrabble, calling me out of my name, the N-word, with the ER on it. Like, it was so dark.
But what did the professional team say about hate mail in your locker? What did they say about that?
They didn't care. It had nothing to do with them, so they didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
They had no care. I would get hate mail in my Facebook, on my Instagram, on my Twitter. They didn't care.
Right.
Because ultimately, it was my choice, which I wholeheartedly understand. And it was a time that our owner, Jed York, said that he supported our protest. But he just said it. You know, he said it just to act like he was a part of it and he supported it. He didn't support us.
Do you still get hate mail?
Say it again.
Do you still get hate mail?
It stopped when I went to Detroit. So in 2018 is when it stopped. So it was like 2 years of N-word this, N-word that, go back to Africa, do it. Like, it was bad. Like,
mm-hmm.
it was very bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it even happened with some of the people that I grew up with. Even some people in my family disagreed with it.
Right.
You know, and it makes no sense to me. Because we say that we're proud to be black. We say that we're proud to be Afro-Americans. We say that we're thankful for all the efforts of the people that came before us to fight for our freedom. But then we'll turn around in the same breath and say, well, you have this privilege. You got a chance to play in the NFL. Why would you mess this up? You want to know why? Because I'm not a slave. I'm not a slave. I'm not going to sit here and have a platform and just keep my mouth shut, which they want you to do, because they know how much power athletes have. So I'm not going to sit here like some of these other guys and keep my mouth shut when I see my people out here suffering and they don't feel that they have a voice. So I wanted to be a voice for the voiceless. I wanted to be a voice for the people that were still being downpressed by our society, and most importantly, by the police force. You think I'm going to sit here and have a platform to be able to speak for these people and not say nothing? No. So I took it upon myself, along with Eric and Kyle and Colin and another few guys that joined the protest, and I wanted to actually try to get a message across and try to raise awareness, which we did, so the masses would be able to see what was going on, because the media wasn't shining the light on it.
Eli Harrell is my guest today, if you just joined the program. Former player in the NFL. You know what, Eli? I've always felt this, and you don't have to respond to it, but I always felt like Colin Kaepernick was a smart, intelligent man. And I always felt like when he took that knee, he knew what he was doing. He knew the consequences of it. And I just always felt like what he was doing was greater than football. I just always felt like he knew what was going to happen, and he wasn't bothered about ever playing football again because he wanted to stand up for what was right. That's just the way I've always felt about it. I don't know him. I've never met him. None of that. It's just the feeling I've gotten.
Absolutely, and that's the truth.
What you did and what you continue to do, it's so important for the community. And people listening to you, very rarely do I do interviews and I get goosebumps in the middle of the interview, okay? So I've gotten goosebumps in the middle of this interview because listening to the passion in your voice, you know, it just, because you see so much foolishness everywhere, television, newspapers, movies, whatever, so much foolishness. But when you see someone who is so passionate about what they're doing and what they have done, and when it's for the greater good of others, it just makes you, it just relives that hope that you have within you, you know? Because you didn't have to do that.
I got goosebumps again. Like, talking about this, it reignited my flame.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I say, as soon as you feel like you're taking steps and progressing forward, it's like something smacks you and it knocks you right back down to where you were. Right. So this battle that those guys begun is still, all they did was pass the torch.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
That's all they did. So I felt obligated and I feel like I was born into activism. My mom wasn't one, but I just feel like she named me what she named me for a reason. And I believe in divine. Mm-hmm. I believe in the divine. And mm-hmm. I think everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm this is me until the good Lord calls me home, because I'm not changing for nobody. I'm not bending. I'm not even going to bend, because I know what's right and I know what's wrong, you know. And I just feel like until people can look at another person and not see color, mm-hmm. I think we're going to continue to miss what it is that we were meant to receive. Because people got to realize that we are human beings first. I'm looking past woman. I'm looking past man. I'm looking past color. We got to get back to the root. Until we can get back to the root of this thing, then we're going to continue to be divided. We're going to continue to judge. We're going to continue to spread negativity and instead of shedding the light and speaking life into each other. You know, that's just how I feel, and I just know that we can do this thing. It just takes everybody just waking up. Like my uncle used to say, wake up and smell the coffee. You know, I feel like a lot of people are living and walking around with their eyes wide shut, Michelle.
Wide shut.
You know,
mm-hmm.
That's white, black, Jew, Gentile,
mm-hmm.
Christian. Muslim. I mean, that's everybody.
Because it's easy.
Know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's easy.
Yeah, it's easy.
Because it's easy. Mm-hmm. You know, no one wants to get dirty anymore. No mm-hmm. one wants to upset others. Everybody wants to people please. And what comes with people pleasing is selling your soul.
Well,
there
are people that don't want to people please. There are people that want to stomp on other people and think nothing of it and keep right on going.
That is true. Mm-hmm. So that's the other end of it, right?
Yeah,
instead of just being real and admitting when you're wrong, shedding that ego, let that ego go. Just let it go.
Eli Harrell, I'm sorry. I don't hate to cut you off. We only have about 30 more seconds. Can you tell people how they can get in contact with you? I know you said you're doing some training out there. How, social media handles, maybe?
Yeah, so my Instagram is Eli Harrell Senior _. My training page is Seven Legend, S7VEN Legend, LEGEND Train, TRAIN. And my Twitter is Eli Harrell Senior _ as well. Thank you so much for having me on, Michelle. I appreciate you shining your light on us. And I wish you nothing but the best going here forward.
Thank you. If there's ever any time you need the airwaves, you know who to call, okay?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you. You all, thanks for listening on this Sunday morning. Cheryl Wilkerson saying, as always, behold the green and gold.